This is Joanna Schrader reporting live at Commodity Classic, and I'm with Brian Jennings, who's the Executive Director of the American Coalition for Ethanol. Brian, how are you?
I'm great, Joanna. Thanks.
Well, you arrived here in California just on the cusp of an announcement that the EPA was actually delaying any decisions on the E15 waiver. Can you give us just a quick background on what the E15 waiver is and what the impact of this delay means?
Sure. The waiver was submitted to EPA in March of 2009, and it simply asked EPA to waive the Clean Air Act to allow up to 15% ethanol in motor fuels for vehicles and off-road engines. EPA came out on the 1st of December and said, we are not in a position to make a decision yet. We need more time to look at more research and testing that's taking place. And so we feel like we'll be in a position, they said, to make a decision on the E15 waiver by the middle of 2010. And then earlier this week, the EPA Administrator, Lisa Jackson, in response to a question from a U.S. senator at a congressional hearing, said she felt like they would be ready to make a decision late summer. And so without giving a date, clearly the date has slipped. And that's troubling, I think. And we've got to keep the pressure on.
Now, ACE in particular has done years and years of research of higher blends in conventional vehicles. So why do you suppose they're being so resistant, I suppose, or in making a decision? What's their reasoning for delaying this decision?
Well, you're right, Joanna, to say a lot of research has been done by my organization, but many others, on blends in excess of E15. And so I think that is frustrating to a lot of us watching this process from the outside, understanding that blends like E20 and E30 can work and do work in these engines that are not modified. It seems to me that there's a lot of political pressure on EPA from some corners, the small engine community particularly, to try and find that needle in the haystack that may or may not exist that says, oh, maybe there's a problem with E15. And so what they're doing now is looking at the catalyst durability in cars, and they're also doing some more work on small engines. But it does seem frustrating to us that they keep looking for some sort of an excuse to delay or not to make the decision, when we feel the preponderance of evidence so far and as it continues to come in is going to justify this. And so I think they're under, they being EPA, under enormous pressure from opponents. Unfortunately, I think that's affecting this timeline a little bit. And we just have to keep the pressure on our side as well and make sure whatever data we have, we provide to EPA.
So, Brian, how do you respond to the fact that, we have goals set by the EPA under the Renewable Fuel Standard to achieve a certain amount of fuel by, the end of this year, all the way up to 36 billion gallons by 2022?
Yeah.
But how, on one end, we can't possibly achieve that from a, if they won't blend higher blends.
Right.
I mean, this industry is ready to go. So, how do you explain to people that you can't have one without the other?
Yeah, they are completely incongruent. You're right. You've got a federal law that says 36 billion gallons, and then you've got a regulation that limits us to 10%. And the two don't work together. And I think there's got to be greater recognition by, everyone within the Obama administration that they've got to help us fix this problem, that the data justifies it. And increasingly, they've got to recognize we can't make this quantum leap from E10 to E85 and expect to meet the goals of the RFS. It's going to have to take these mid-level blends. You're exactly right. I think slowly that realization is coming to folks within the administration. We know a lot of members of Congress get it, and we just need to make sure that they apply pressure on EPA and that we continue to talk. I understand Secretary Vilsack was here, and I think he's been as forceful as anyone within the administration in supporting this, but we've got to get EPA to sort of move off that dime too.
Now, this delay is also affecting different groups of people. It's affecting the biofuels industry. It's affecting the agricultural community, and quite frankly, it affects consumers. Can you briefly touch on, how this delay is affecting those different groups?
Sure. For the biofuels community, it's pretty obvious. It's a cloud over, it's a wall. It's the blend wall, one, but it's also sort of a cloud over where we're going to grow in the future and how we're going to grow. It's harmful to corn ethanol producers because it's limiting our ability to create demand. It's harmful to second generation, to cellulosic advanced biofuel producers, because without that market certainty, no lender is going to be willing to put that money on the table to help them construct these very expensive facilities. For the corn growers, it's troubling as well because, they need several outlets, several demand centers for their product. And, you know, obviously the livestock industry is very important to corn growers, and ethanol increasingly each year becomes more and more important to corn growers. But if we aren't able to create this demand for additional ethanol, we could find ourselves back in a situation where the corn growers that are here are raising corn below the cost of production, and we don't want that to happen. And then finally, you make a very good point for consumers, because this isn't entirely self-serving for ourselves. You know, we feel as if the science has proven that ethanol reduces greenhouse gas emissions, it reduces our use of fossil fuels, it's more cost-effective at the pump. And so if we're able to move to E15, consumers would benefit with more cost-effective fuel, more low-carbon fuel, reductions in foreign oil imports, and that helps the consumer in California or anywhere else as well. And so you're right, there's a lot at stake here, and I do feel confident that we're going to get E15 approved, Joanna. I just am increasingly troubled that it seems like it's going to be taking us much longer than what we thought.
So that being said, Brian, what is ACE's next step?
Our next step is, one, we're going to continue to push for E15, but we've got to go beyond E15, and we've got to sort of have a longer-term strategic vision for how we're going to create demand for ethanol. And so our real focus is on choice. There's legislation introduced in the Senate, Joanna, and there will be soon. We've been working with members of the House to enact a bill that would allow for more blender pumps and more flexible fuel vehicles. If every car on the road today were an FFV, we wouldn't have to ask EPA to waive the Clean Air Act for E15. And so we want to work very aggressively to get that legislation in place. And so the framework is there in the future where we don't have to keep going to EPA asking for a waiver. Higher blends, mid-level blends through the blender pumps and with the ability of the FFVs will be used if we're able to accomplish that. It's going to take a lot of work, but we're going to work hard on it. We're going to have a fly-in, actually, to Washington, D.C. with our members on the 22nd and 23rd of this month to lobby Congress. And so that consumer choice angle is what we're going to work on.
So, Brian, for those consumers who'd like to be involved, where can they go to get more information?
Well, there's so many places. I probably won't be able to name them all. But, you know, a lot of stuff on the Internet. I know the ethanol.org is our website. RFA and Growth Energy and the corn growers all have really good stuff out there. I should mention the corn growers have funded a blender pump campaign that we're working on in partnership with RFA called Blend Your Own Ethanol, and I think that's byoethanol.com. So there are a lot of good resources out there for people to look into.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.